Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is the podcast all about what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game developers, and all the latest trends. I'm John Jordan, and in this episode, we're going to focus on social gaming and the use of AI in mobile games. And joining us as our expert in that field is Dr. Marisanna Pulkkari. And she's the co-founder and CEO of Utopian Analytics, and apparently has the first PhD in the world for language independent text analytics, which is, I don't even know what that means. So, how are you doing, Marisanna?
Very good, thank you. We can talk about what it means later.
This is what we're going to talk about. This is what we're going to learn about and how it relates to mobile games and games more generally as well. Also joining us, we have Kalle Halkkonen, who's a senior analyst at Game Refinery by Vungle. How's it going, Kalle?
Very good. Thanks for asking, John. How about you?
Yes. You like my new background? We did it specially. I think it's really good.
That's. I should have that one too.
You should demand it. Exactly. You should demand it.
Yeah.
Good. So in the podcast today, we're going to be sort of looking, we're going to start off looking at some of the trends around sort of social gaming in mobile, and then we're going to sort of look at some of the new sort of technologies around sort of AI, machine learning, and sort of how that can help game developers make sure that they are keeping their environments safe and legal. So let's kick off with the social stuff. So we've always had social features in games, but what's been going on particularly in mobile social games? Kalle, do you want to kind of lead us off on that?
Yeah, thank you, John. So definitely. So social elements and the social features, definitely something that it's becoming a bigger and bigger part of the sort of the engagement strategies for mobile games. And there are particularly three things that I would sort of point out when it comes to sort of trends in this space. So the first one is being the sort of rise of social features, especially in casual games. So traditionally, we have seen social mechanics being associated with, especially with mid-core games. For example, the deep guild systems that we see in genres like Forex Strategy. And then on the other hand, casual games have traditionally be more focused on the core action layers and the social interaction aspects have been quite light. So you've had features like you sending lives to other players and stuff like that. But what we are seeing right now is that more and more casual games are now adding social features and different kinds of spaces where people can interact with each other. And I guess it's partly because people and players, they're looking for social interaction and sort of sense of digital togetherness, and that has been one catalyst for the sort of surge in popularity for social gaming and playing together with other people. And while sort of the competitive aspects, they might not be that important for casual gamers, they still do enjoy these certain competitive elements in games, especially when they do it that as a part of a team. And guild feature is something that we are especially seeing trending in the casual scene. So the utilization of that feature among top 100 crossing games in match tree puzzle games has actually increased 30% during the last 12 months. So currently, more than 60% of the match 3 games in the 100 crossing have guild systems. So that's one thing. And the other thing I would mention is the sort of emergence of these features that we call social hangout spaces. So what we mean by those is these separate modes in games unrelated to the actual core gameplay. So they often include different kinds of mini games and various ways to communicate with each other by using voice chat or text chat. And the point is that you use your avatar character in these modes and then engage with these activities. There can be like photo shoot things that you take photos with each other and all different kinds of ways to socially interact. In Western games, we can think of games like Roblox or the Fortnite's Party Island. like fitting this this kind of mode. But in, for example, in China, there can be found in loads of different kinds of games. Actually, the Game Refinery data that we have says that 29% of the Chinese top 200 games have this feature. And I firmly believe that partly this has been boosted by the COVID thing and people, you know, finding different kinds of ways to digitally interact with each other. And the last thing I would mention is that how we are seeing social elements combined with monetization elements. And a couple of examples just throw out here is the co-op battle passes that we see in games like Mobile Legends Bang Bang and PUBG Mobile. So the idea is that you have a battle pass plan and then you can form a team inside these battle passes. And then the more members you can invite to these plans, the better the rewards are for everyone. And another example is these communal progressive IAP events where everyone, for example, in a certain server or in a certain guild can reserve rewards if they all communally, cooperatively spend enough premium currency or real money. So that's another example.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
So those three, just to recap, combining social with monetization, the emergence of social hangout areas, and then the rise of social features in casual games.
Yeah, it's just got a good point that you make that These features have sort of, to a degree, all been around for you know, getting on for even in mobile for a decade, and they sort of came about in these sort of very highly engaged, highly monetized kind of 4X games, because that was kind of, I guess they were looking at the MMOs, and that was sort of where they took their design kind of prompts from. So yes, yeah, so certainly remember back in the days of a Game of War, you had these intense sort of guilds, alliances, and that was very much how they drove their monetization, wasn't it? They sort of I think that was the first game I saw where you sort of bought things in a game, and your guild members also got stuff, so you could kind of see this almost like a, you know, obviously encouraging everyone to spend in the, even if you really weren't part of the alliance, it was better to be part of an alliance because you got more stuff, and then once you were in the alliance, you obviously wanted to kind of stay in there. So it's interesting how that stuff sort of floats down in different ways from the hardcore to the mid-core. And now I was surprised at that stat. Let's just check I got it right. So you're saying 60% of the top 100 match 3 games have this sort of mechanic in there now.
Exactly. And 1 year ago it was still 30%, so
yeah,
so it has practically doubled.
Cool. So I guess that's sort of the kind of underlying, that's the background for what we're going to be sort of talking about in more depth. That basically casual games, I've always kind of felt casual games is the wrong term, isn't it? But I guess that's sort of the case. These are not casual experiences now, when people spending lots of hours, lots of time, lots of money, and building social networks in there, sort of within those. Someone needs to come up with a better term for that. Anyway, so that's where we are with mobile, and this is sort of how companies like Utopian Analytics can bring their sort of smarts into the game. So, Mary Sanna, do you want to start at the top and talk a bit about what Utopia Analytics sort of does?
Utopia is a text analytics company. We do any kind of text analysis, and it works for any language in the world. So basically, any language or any dialect can be analyzed in the same way. This is quite unique in the text analytics tools. Usually you can analyze English and then some other languages, and that's all. But we can do any small, even small dialect.
So with a sort of journalist hat on, when someone says any, then immediately you kind of think, well, there must be something you can't do. So I'm just checking that you're literally saying, so basically any language that has a text form to it, you can sort of use that.
It has to be in some kind of text form, but it doesn't need to be the Latin alphabet. It can be any characters that what is used, but there needs to be some kind of characters in order to read it.
And does that mean then that all languages sort of have the same sort of, I'm going to get the wrong term here, but all sort of languages must have the same structure, because I guess you're using sort of AI to kind of analyze how language sort of hangs together in some clever way.
The languages as such, they don't have the same structure. The structures of the languages differ a lot from language to language. But what is similar between all languages is that we humans, as kids, we learn the languages from our parents and other people around us. And we start to learn and use the language, and we start to be native speakers. So that is the requirement for a language. It needs to be like fluent language spoken by people, and written, of course, because we analyze text mostly.
And in terms of obviously, you know, you've done your PhD and done all the sort of, I'm sure there's a lot of academic work sort of backing this kind of stuff up. But how did you move from that sort of academic understanding to a, obviously, you know, commercializing a product? Because that's normally, there's lots of clever ideas in academia, and lots of companies are sort of started and they don't quite do that commercialization thing. That's probably, you know, the hardest bit.
Yeah, I know what you're talking. I'm not an academic person myself. I'm very practical, and I noticed already when I was working at the university as a researcher that I'm one of the most practical people. And now I've found the place where I can use like the academic background, all the things and skills learned from there, but then doing something that works in real life. And our product, Utopia AI Moderator, is moderating any language, as we do any language. For example, in-game chats. And that's something, it's very practical. It's something that affects many people around the world. And I find it very interesting to do something that happens in real life and helps people.
So obviously, you know, we focus on games because games are the best thing in the world, obviously, but that's not where everyone, how everything works. I mean, how many, your products can be used across sorts of different industries. So how did you end up, you know, I don't know what percentage of your kind of business is in games. I don't know if you would even sort of tell us that, but were you surprised that games companies would be interested in this sort of stuff?
We started moderating news comments, and that bit slower communication than what's happening in games. We went quickly to online marketplaces, and we have been moderating all kinds of user-generated content. And this gaming industry is quite new for us. And what is different in gaming industry is mostly the big volumes. So that is the biggest difference. The volumes are very huge. And also something what we find in the gaming industry, especially, of course, somewhere else sometimes also, but the toxicity is quite high on games, which is unfortunate. And I think especially there, the AI would be needed to help in moderation, because the volumes are large, then you can't use the traditional ways of manual moderation to help to save the people's communities.
Do you have any, I mean, I guess you're probably not from the technical point of view. I mean, would there be any reason why you think that's sort of higher in toxicity is higher in games? Maybe because they're seen as sort of more playful spaces. So I guess if you go to a big newspaper and start writing rude things on their, you know, on their comment system, then that's sort of seen as, that's not the place to do that. Whereas maybe the problem with games is because games are seen as not being very serious or not taken very seriously necessarily, and probably have a younger age range. Then there's less sort of rules. People feel like it's a more open space. I don't know if that's a thing you can comment on.
Frankly, I don't know what's the reason, but there may be a few reasons. One of them is that on newspapers, the editors want to make sure that their content on their platform is okay. So there's a tradition to pre-moderate all content. And on gaming, there's a tradition not to moderate anything, but people come in the first time you come in and you start learning how to play, and then the other people behave whatever they do because there's no one saying what to do. It is quite recent activity that the moderation has been done better than earlier with only the spam filters. As we know that in natural languages, it is very easy to find a new way to say ugly things to other people. And that's one of the pain points for the traditional moderation tools. They can't understand those things. And then you're able to say those if moderation was available on the platform.
Okay, so I'm gonna kind of couch this question sort of carefully for non-experts like us who probably do think AI moderation is just looking at rude words and filtering them out, which you just said it's not. How does it actually work? Because obviously the human language is a very flexible thing, and slang is obviously, you know, slang words are being kind of invented all the time, and I guess in some cases as stuff gets moderated, then obviously people sort of come up with new rude ways of saying things. So without getting too technical, how does it actually work?
I'll try to be not too technical. The basic thing is that humans need to define what kind of content to accept and what to decline. And if human moderators wouldn't understand the message, then we can't train the AI to understand the message. So we need very skilled humans to say that this kind of messages are accepted in this game and other kind of messages are not. And there are different kind of AIs. So all AI products are like different apps. And you need to remember that if one app works in this way, the other one is different. But the AIs we are working on with Utopia, they learn from these human decisions. And that's the only source of information what the AI needs to learn. And we built a separate AI model for each game. So basically it means that each game have their own rules and their own policies, what kind of discussion is okay on this platform. And I think it is quite democratic way to do it. So each game defines their own, what kind of community there is. So the AI is trained with human moderation decisions. And then the AI learns to mimic the human behavior in the moderation. And then it's very quick. So it can be used to moderate the content before it is published to the other players. So basically they wouldn't ever see the bad content when the humans have defined that these kind of things are bad and not acceptable here. And this AI, what we use, it also is able to understand any kind of slang. It depends on whether the humans understood early the slang. And if they did, then the AI learns to do the same. And also, as you said, the languages change and evolve over time. Our AI also learns all the time. We need humans to define make some moderation decisions every now and then to have some new data for the AI to learn. And in this way, we learn all the new things coming to the games and in the discussions and start to be able to moderate that as well automatically.
So that sort of initial training process, how sort of long does that take? What sort of how would that sort of play out if someone was looking to integrate with you guys?
We are very quick in that. So we promise the model to be production quality ready in 2 weeks. So any language you are able to get it in 2 weeks. So this is quite quick compared to many other tools, AI tools you may have learned.
And is that, how does that sort of break down on a language basis? Do you have to train it sort of on a per language basis, or can it sort of go a bit? I guess some languages are sort of broadly similar. So
it depends on the case. There are many reasons why different languages should be modeled separately, but sometimes they are combined together. For example, if all the users use different languages mixed, and there is no way to separate them, besides using language recognition tools. So basically, we take the language separately if it is possible. For example, if the different languages are on separate servers, then that's okay. But otherwise, they can be combined in one model. The quality of the AI model is a bit better if we have separate models for each language. It is just mathematical fact.
Yeah, but I suppose the nice thing about it is, as you say, the training process is you could have a very different sort of level of sort of language for a game that was obviously being played by kind of young teenagers compared to one that is for whatever reason like an 18 plus game. So you do have that. You're not just sort of throwing a monolithic machine learning system at it and without any sort of ways of changing the what you're allowing, because clearly adults are going to talk in a different way than children.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why we think that the way how we build the AI models is very important, because it only learns that language used in that game and it adapts to the new versions of the languages or language over time at that game. So it's always different than in other games because the audience is slightly different everywhere.
So one of the games you sort of highlight as a client is the is Star Stable, which is a sort of PC and now mobile sort of horse-based MMO. So obviously does got scaled down quite low, kind of female sort of focus, because it's kind of horses and the thing, it scales like a lot of these games from sort of pre-teens that kind of upwards. Can you talk a little bit about how it's worked out? How it's worked out for them being a client and how that sort of how that process has sort of gone changed over time?
Yeah, any kids can play this game, but it's not for adults. It is played in Europe, in very many countries in Europe and also in US, and there are over 15 languages used in the discussions. So we have Utopia AI moderator model running for each of the languages, and it pre-moderates each chat message between the kids so that it prevents the kids from bullying each other or revealing personal identifiable information about themselves to the other kids. And also grooming is something that really much need to be avoided on this kind of kids communities. So basically, Star Staple have defined what is their moderation policy, what kind of content they want to accept there and what they don't want to accept. And then that is automated by the AI to learn from the human decisions. And this moderation is updated on a regular basis. So we at Utopia, we take care of the AI, and Star Staple then defines their moderation policy all the time, what they if they want to update it in any way.
So that's quite interesting then. It's not just sort of dealing with bad language. It's also dealing with, it's also, you know, making a safe space in terms of, yeah, some children don't really understand that when they're giving away too much information. So that's actually quite a subtle sort of different sort of feature that you can bring.
Yeah, it is one example. In US, it is quite, there is this COPPA law, and it is quite important to do this kind of moderation as well.
And are you seeing sort of a bigger kind of interest among games companies? Is this something now you have, now you've been sort of doing it for quite a few years? Is that something, or is it something you think games companies are still a little bit unaware of and just a bit stuck with just sort of spam filtering or word feed filtering?
Yeah, there are some games companies who are very responsible in their audiences, and they have then focused on the moderation tools and other tools how to prevent their players from other players who don't behave. And other games are not that much focused. And I really think that if we were to organize a big event in the physical life, we would definitely have janitors or some kind of security people there. It's in the laws in most of the country that you need to have that. And in my opinion, in the online games, you need to have the same kind of structures that if there are very many people who can interact with each other, there should be some kind of security system that takes care of the users that they are not harming each other.
As you say, probably in different jurisdictions, there's different legal kind of rules around kind of the sort of safeguarding, certainly of minors. So it's an issue, I guess, kind of privacy in general is something that's becoming sort of more important. So at the moment, sort of you're sort of tech based. Where does that sort of technology go? Is it how quickly do you think, you know, something like kind of voice stuff, can you do that? Because obviously that's sort of the next level up, much more complicated. Is that sort of on the roadmap, or is that, does that require sort of more technical breakthroughs?
Yeah, we are able to do it already now. So basically, voice chats are a bit different than text chats in a way that those can't be pre-moderated. So basically, if you don't want to delay how the people interact with each other, you can't touch the voice signal. But basically what you can do is like a few seconds later notice if something ugly or other kind of improper content was said in the voice, and that is technically made by using speech to text tool first and then giving that text format for Utopia AI moderator. And as we know, speech to text tools are not always working perfectly. So some languages work very well and others not that well. So for example, English works pretty well, but when there's slang and this kind of very casual talking, it may be quite broken text what you get out of there. It would be very difficult for a human to read it and try to decide whether it is improper or not. But our AI is able to read that as well. So as long as the speech to text is consistent in what kind of errors it makes, our tool learns to understand what the content is. So basically, it is the next step in moderation to also moderate voice chat. And that would be then used, for example, giving like negative points to the users if they don't behave. And then, for example, banning them from the game if they get too many points. So I suppose that would be a very effective way to make sure that the discussions stay calm and nice to other people.
And in general, on the timing point, you know, how quick does the system work?
Yeah, it is. We have never had any trouble in the delay. So basically, it is very quick in our end to do the moderation part. And then there's, of course, the network, internet delay. Mm. But humans, if it is like normal chat, humans don't notice delays of 1 second. So
yeah,
it's always below that.
I imagine your server costs are quite expensive.
well, when you have a lot of traffic on the servers, yes.
Exactly. one of the interesting outcomes, I suppose, of running this kind of company is you have to suddenly spend a lot of time looking at server locations and modifying all your optimizing all your code for servers and stuff. Cool, good. So, Calle, what do you make of that? I guess I don't know if you're an expert in this sort of thing. I mean, do you think at the moment that sort of games companies are, I guess games companies do treat things like, you know, we've heard about sort of privacy things and stuff like COPPA when that came in the States, and so the high level stuff, I guess, big companies' legal teams sort of tell them to deal with it. But I don't hear a lot of talk about this sort of thing very much, which is I guess kind of funny as we're seeing more user generated content, more casual stuff as you said. So do you think people should be taking this a lot more seriously?
Yeah, I definitely do, and this was really fascinating to hear you guys discuss this. And like you mentioned, user generated content, and we have all these new games that are leveraging that, and games that are solely sort of built on the user generated content, like Roblox and stuff like that. And like I discussed before, all the different ways to socially interact inside games are just, you know, on the rise. And a good example is the social hangout areas, where one of the major components of those modes is that you communicate with each other via text, via voice chat. Sometimes you even have these sort of like boards where you can draw stuff on and stuff like that. So like being able to moderate that sort of content is going to be very, very essential for all the games, especially the games that have these kinds of modes and support for instance user generated content. The games what I've played, the only visibility I have in this topic is that in some of the games that I have played, when you type something and you sometimes just see that it's been sort of a blocked or something like that. Obviously I'm personally operating much in the Chinese games, so sometimes just bump into all kinds of stuff like that.
Can you do moderation of images at the moment? Can you sort of build that into your system?
Yes, we moderate images as well. It works in the same way as the text moderation. So we train a separate image model for each game separately, and depending on what kind of content they want to accept and whatnot, we train the model.
I guess, yeah. If you can get an input into the machine learning model, then it deals with it, doesn't it? That's the clever bit is that inflow into the model. Lovely. Well, thank you both very much for your expertise and talking about the trends and the specifics of what games companies should be doing to deal with things like moderation. Well, they should be dealing with things like moderation in games, and we'll see more of that in the future. Thanks very much for. People who have been watching and listening, obviously we're available as podcast and as a video as well. So thanks for that. Thank you to Calle.
Thank you.
And thank you to Marie Sana.
Thank you very much.
And yes, remember, we are publishing podcasts on what's going on in games and such a lot going on in games now. There's, you know, these very now sort of what would have been seen as sort of a very technically advanced kind of techniques now kind of commonplace, I think. And as mobile games sort of grow, we take up more of the gaming and the technology space, and more things come in. And we managed to get through the entire episode without talking about metaverse, so that was quite good. Normally we have to have some metaverse stuff in there. So anyway, thanks for watching and listening. Please do subscribe to the channel and come back next time to see what's going on in the world of the Mobile Game Dev Playbook.